Columbia's news headquarters in New York, Bob Trout speaking. To start off this broadcast, here I think we better go over the text of the broadcast which the Domei Agency in Japan has put out this morning and which has caused all the excitement. We're not sure yet exactly what it does mean, but to start this news broadcast and to catch up on what is going on, let's go into the text. This is what Domei says. By the gracious command of His Majesty the Emperor, who, ever to enhance the cause of world peace, desires earnestly to bring about an early termination of hostilities with a view to saving mankind from the calamities to be imposed upon them by further continuation of the war, the Japanese government asked several weeks ago the Soviet government, with which it had neutral relations then, to render good offices in restoring peace with the enemy powers. Unfortunately, these efforts in the interest of peace having failed, the Japanese government, in conformity with the august wish of His Majesty to restore the general peace, and desiring to put an end to the untold suffering led by war as quickly as possible, has decided upon the following. The Japanese government are ready to accept the terms by the joint declaration which was issued at Potsdam in 1945 by the heads of the governments of the United States, Great Britain, and China, and later subscribed to by the Soviet government. With the understanding that the said declaration does not comprise any demand which prejudices the prerogatives of His Majesty as a sovereign ruler. Now that is the text as we have it here in our Columbia News headquarters in New York of the Tokyo Radio, which broadcast the Domei Agency's report. The sentences are very long, as you noticed, and are a bit hard to follow. Of course, that last sentence particularly seems to have a sort of typographical error in it. If you've been listening to Columbia earlier this morning, you know that that's just the way we did get the broadcast, and that's as far as it has gone so far. That last sentence says the declaration does not comprise any demand which prejudices the prerogatives of His Majesty as a sovereign ruler. Presumably, it should read compromise, but we just don't know. The Japanese government are ready to accept the Potsdam ultimatum with the understanding that the ultimatum does not compromise the prerogatives of the emperor as a sovereign ruler. That does seem to be the gist of the broadcast which we have this morning and which has caused all the stir so far. Now, let's run over some of the points of the Potsdam ultimatum, which was issued 2 weeks ago yesterday, July 26th, by President Truman, Prime Minister Churchill, and Premier Chiang Kai-shek of China. And as we have seen in the Japanese broadcast, Russia has associated herself with this Potsdam ultimatum more or less automatically when Russia joined the war against Japan 2 days ago. Well, these are the points of the Potsdam ultimatum. First, the ultimatum calls for the elimination for all time of the authority and influence of those who led Japan into her career of conquest. Now, of course, right at that very first point, we come to a question of whether it includes the emperor. Whether or not it does include the emperor, we just don't know, and we're going to have to wait, at least through this day, I should say, for further information to know what is in the minds of the Allied leaders in Washington, in London, in Moscow about the emperor, and whether the emperor conceivably comes under the head of those who led Japan into her career of conquest, or perhaps whether that is intended to mean only the politicians who formed the government and who, working under the emperor, have conducted the war so far. At any rate, the Potsdam ultimatum does call for the elimination for all time of the authority and influence of those who led Japan into her career of conquest. And then the ultimatum says that it calls for the occupation of points in Japanese territory to be designated by the Allies until a new order of peace and security in the world is assured. It also calls for the limitation of Japanese sovereignty to the main Japanese islands, which are Honshu, Hokkaido, Kyushu, Shikoku, and a few minor islands. Also, the Potsdam ultimatum specifies that the terms of the Cairo Declaration will be followed out, which means stripping Japan of all her conquests. The complete disarmament of the Japanese armed forces. Of course, the ultimatum does promise that the Japanese people will not be enslaved. But it also promises stern justice for war criminals, and there we come to another point on which it is possible that there might be some conflict with the broadcast which the Tokyo Radio has put out this morning. Whether Emperor Hirohito might conceivably be considered a war criminal, no one can say, at least no one who is not in the ranks of the highest Allied officials. The Potsdam Ultimatum also calls for the removal by the Japanese government of all obstacles to a revival of democracy, to a revival of freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom of thought. And that is the third point in the ultimatum, which I notice as we just skip over it roughly here, which might possibly bear upon the Japanese call, the Japanese offer, we might say, by the Japanese radio, the offer by the Japanese radio to accept the Potsdam Ultimatum, provided that the emperor does remain upon his throne. Can we consider that Emperor Hirohito is an obstacle to a revival of democracy, of freedom of speech, religion, and thought in Japan? On that question, too, there may hinge some doubt as to how seriously the Japanese offer today will be taken. And the Potsdam Ultimatum also promised Japan that Japan could retain such industries as will sustain her economy and will permit reparations in kind. That's the kind of reparations which Germany is now going to have to pay. And as we have seen from the Potsdam communique, not to be confused with the ultimatum, and with President Truman's broadcast last night in which he gave us further details of the Potsdam conference. But to go on with the ultimatum, to retain such industries as will sustain her economy and permit reparations in kind, and it also promises Japan access to raw materials and to world trade. And finally, as we run down roughly this list of abbreviated points from the Potsdam Ultimatum, we find a promise to withdraw the occupying Allied forces when Japan has established a government which is peacefully inclined in accordance with the freely expressed will of the Japanese people. And that last point does not seem to have anything to do with the emperor, I must say, because a peacefully inclined government does apply to the politicians and does not refer to the emperor himself. We're beginning to get a bit of reaction now here at Columbia's News headquarters in New York. In London, usually reliable sources say that the reported Tokyo demand, which we've just been going over, for protecting the sovereignty of the emperor, probably would be acceptable to Great Britain, insofar as that particular phase of the situation is concerned. London commentators, who've just heard about this a few moments ago, as have we all, said that Britain has been following the American lead in the attitude toward the status of Emperor Hirohito and will likely continue to do so in the Allied reaction to this Tokyo radio purported conditional Japanese acceptance of the Potsdam Ultimatum. That's the way the reaction story reads from London. What it's saying, of course, is that the Tokyo radio's offer today is actually an offer to accept surrender with a condition, the condition being that the emperor does remain on the throne. A British Foreign Office spokesman noted the significance of American leaflets urging the Japanese people to ask their emperor to surrender, and the Foreign Office spokesman said, very logically, nobody would have urged the German people to ask Hitler to surrender. But that is true, what the British Foreign Office spokesman brought out today when he was very obviously asked by reporters in London this morning about this surrender report. He brought out the fact that the leaflets prepared by the OWI and dropped on Japan have been urging the Japanese people to go to the emperor and to ask him to surrender. And that seems to be just what he's doing this morning, as nearly as we can read those rather twisted and long and elegant sentences. In Washington, the White House says that President Truman has received no word at all of the purported peace offer. That's the reaction from London, and then a very brief reaction from Washington. The White House announces that the president has received no word of this supposed peace offer. However, Chairman Thomas, a Democrat from Utah, says that if the surrender terms broadcast by Dome are officially submitted to the government, they ought to be accepted. He said that retention of the emperor on the throne would be all to the good so far as we are concerned. I'm just running my eye down this piece of tape to see if I can find out whether Mr. Thomas is a senator or a representative. There are several of them by that name. I guess he is a senator. That's Senator Thomas, the Democrat from Utah. He says that retention of the emperor on the throne would be all to the good so far as we're concerned. And he goes on to say, if we retain the emperor in Japan, it will give us a constitutional government with which to deal. Senator Thomas, incidentally, I see here, has been making weekly shortwave radio talks beamed to the Japanese urging their surrenders. And he says that the Allies can deal just as sternly with the Japanese, with the emperor in power, as they can with a completely disorganized Japanese homeland. That's the comment of Senator Thomas. And the dispatch goes on to remind us that in Congress there have been two schools of thought on whether the emperor should be retained. One school in Congress has roughly followed this Thomas position, which we've just reported to you, and the other is that the emperor should be done away with and the office of emperor abolished. Those who have called for the retention of the emperor have said that to remove him from office would be to upset the whole religious and social structure of Japan, with resulting chaos. But others have urged that there cannot be any assurance of future peaceful behavior by the Japanese as long as the emperor is subject to control by military cliques as he has been in the past. There's some further reaction from Washington, a story which tells us that the indications are that several days might be necessary for direct contact and surrender arrangements if the United States and her allies decide to accept the conditional Japanese peace offer, and of course if this conditional Japanese offer is genuine. We've no reason to doubt its genuineness so far this morning, but there is nothing official from any Allied capital so far, as you have noticed if you've been with us through the morning. However, even supposing that this offer is genuine, and supposing that the Allies do permit the Japanese to make one condition, despite all we've said about unconditional surrender, if we do permit them to make the one condition that the Emperor will stay, it does seem, according to this dispatch from Washington, and it's a very natural-sounding dispatch, the indications are that several days may be necessary for direct contact with Tokyo and the arrangements for the actual carrying out of the surrender. So far, there's been no sign of any unusual activity at the White House or the State Department either, which is something of a contrast to the last days of the war in Europe. Assuming that the offer is authentic, it is believed in Washington that a considerable period of time will be necessary during which the arrangements for the formal signing of some kind of document can be completed. If the Japanese really do intend to get out of the war now, they undoubtedly will be required to sign a formal surrender document presented to them by the Allied nations. As in the case of the Germans at Reims, they will in all likelihood be required to sign what is presented to them without negotiation or without discussions. But on the other hand, that's what the story from Washington tells us, but on the other hand, of course, they apparently are not going to sign anything that affects adversely the position of the emperor. That is, according to their broadcast this morning. More from London, the future of Emperor Hirohito, according to the dispatch that's just coming in now from London, the future of the emperor revolves around the interpretation of point 6 of the Potsdam Declaration, one of the points that I was giving you a few moments ago, the point which touches on whether the Allied governments feel that the emperor is one of the Japanese leaders responsible for the war. Specifically, it's a question of whether the emperor deceived and misled the people of Japan into embarking upon world conquest. The majority of British opinion has been throughout the war that the emperor of Japan is nothing but a tool in the hands of the Japanese warlords. Whether or not a tool can be considered responsible, at least in part, for causing a war, for leading a nation into war, is a rather fine point. It's a point that has been argued and debated in unofficial circles for a long time, and it doesn't take much imagination to bet, or to think at least, that it's being debated rather hotly just now behind the scenes in some of the larger cities of the Allied world. Of course, there's no reason to think that the Allies have not been prepared for just this kind of offer from Japan, for the emperor always has been a sort of thorn in the discussions about what would happen if the Japanese proposed peace. President Truman went on the air last night to make his broadcast, which had been advertised so widely, as a report on the Potsdam Conference, and that's what it turned out to be, despite the rumors that were sweeping through Washington and New York and probably through some cities farther west yesterday. The president referred to Japan in the normal fashion that he has usually used in his broadcasts. He made no reference to an early surrender, and yet this morning we have this broadcast. Well, we'll just have to see. This broadcast has come to you from CBS World News. Further details will be broadcast over many of these stations at 9 a.m. Eastern Wartime. Important bulletins as soon as received. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.